Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
It's the Underpowered Hour on this week's show. JLR teams up with China's Cherry. What happens when you combine a Jeep Wrangler with a Land Rover Defender? And then we talk all about coatings. And now, here's the show. Welcome to the Underpowered Hour. I'm Steve Barris, mild-mannered television executive by day and Land Rover collector by night. You can find out more about our cars and what we're working on at thebarriscollection.com or follow us on Instagram at thebarriscollection. I'm joined, as always, by my good friend, Ike Goss.
Thank you to everyone joining us today. I'm the keyed door lock to Steven's keyless entry. I am the new standard in podcast security. Ike Goss.
I own and operate Pangolin 4x4 in Springfield, Oregon, where we live and breathe Land Rovers. Check us out online on Facebook, Instagram at Pangolin 4x4. Let's get started.
All right, Ike. Well, in the news this week, some exciting things coming out of the hybrid Land Rover space, and not the kind of hybrid that you think about, not a fuel hybrid, rather a Dr. Moreau-like crossing of vehicles hybrid. So you've heard about this probably, and we've certainly talked about this, but the crossing of a Land Rover Defender with a Jeep Wrangler. Mm-hmm. A marriage that people said would never work, sort of a transporter accident that people hoped would die before it made it to the other side. But in fact, you know, a company has grafted together the bones of an LS3 V8 Wrangler into a Land Rover Defender. It looks pretty Land Rover-y. The tires don't quite fit in the wheel arches properly.
No.
But otherwise, I would say it looks pretty Defender-y. You know, they've chopped the top of the windows off, which is a little weird, but otherwise it looks pretty Defender-y, I would say.
Yeah, you know, this harkens back to a lot of Jeep sort of Land Rover hybrids. You know, this is certainly not the first iteration, and mm-hmm. I would say, you know, it's the latest in a long line of Jeep hybrids. You know, the factory, the original Land Rover, the prototype has some Jeep components.
Yeah.
You know,
that's exactly right. Yeah,
it has some Jeep components. It has the Jeep chassis and some Jeep running gear. I believe the transfer case on the original prototype was a Jeep component. Mm-hmm. And then in the '60s, in the late '60s, Jeep approached Land Rover approached Jeep, I don't know which, about building, you know, vehicles for certain markets. And that vehicle had a Jeep body on a Land Rover chassis. And it's pretty interesting. Mm. It was like a factory built prototype, as sort of a joint venture between Land Rover and Jeep. And that car, it had, you know, Land Rover steering wheel, Land Rover pedals, Land Rover chassis, you know, a lot of Land Rover components. It never took flight, never really got off the ground, but some photographs exist of that car, and we'll have to post those up in the show notes.
Cool.
But it's pretty fascinating. So this latest iteration is not an official vehicle. It's, you know, done by an aftermarket.
No, this
company.
Is a homemade. A Blackbridge Motors is the company that makes this. And first, they take a Land Rover Defender, a 110, and then they add 6 inches to the vehicle, mm-hmm. and then they take a chassis from a Jeep Wrangler and an LS3 V8 motor. And they slam all that shit together and they sell it to you for the low price of $169,000. There you go. You know,
what
and it takes about 4 months for them to do that for you.
What I don't know is, you know, there seems to be a couple of companies that are doing this. I think there was another one that was like Legend Motor Cars or something like that.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I could be mistaken on that, but there were a couple companies doing this, and I don't know how many actual Defender parts are used in this vehicle, because the body tub is all aftermarket. Right. It's like an Aqualu tub, I believe.
Oh, okay. Yeah, sure, sure.
And then...
Yeah, because the fenders actually look like a one piece and some other things like that. It doesn't look particularly Defender-y. And the interior, certainly the dash is non-Defender. It looks like a stamped... Almost actually looks surprisingly like Toyota Land Cruiser-y in there.
It kind of looks like a Bayliner boat to me. It has like a big doghouse, you know, with some like stainless cup holders and stuff in it. This vehicle,
some white leather.
You might say this is a replica. Would you say this is a replica Defender?
Could be a replica Defender. Yeah,
like it's in true. The same way that like a Shelby Cobra replica. Like
you're right.
There's like a couple of parts. It's kind of a kit car. Now I don't know how they title this thing. It says it's built on a 2018 Jeep Wrangler chassis. So is that how it's registered,
with a GMC motor in it? So I don't know, a GM LS3 motor in it. So yeah, I'm not sure which VIN number you're going to take to title it. Certainly not the Defender. There is really no Defender in this car. It is at best, I think it's a Jeep, I would say, probably
at best, with a Land Rover body.
I think with a Land Rover body kit on it. Mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah,
you know, the interior actually, to me, it feels just like a tiny bit. It feels a little Humvee-esque, you know, like early Humvee when they first sort of put they kind of like converted the military one over, and they basically just like made big plastic pieces to like wrap around all the military stuff. Kind of looks.
It has that
like
same like big division between the driver and passenger seating areas, right? Yeah. Like the Humvee has that huge doghouse because the drivetrain is like pushed up into the passenger compartment essentially.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what you see here. You know, you see that big doghouse to accommodate, you know, whatever engine and transmission that you might want to put in this body tub.
Into this kit. Yeah. Yeah. So, no, it's true. It is. Yeah. It's the factory five Cobra of Defenders. You know, in fact, it may even be more popular as a home built kit. I think people would be into it. It does appear that they have sourced Land Rover seats to put in the car of all of the pieces to retain from an actual Land Rover. That was not the one to retain. That was a poor choice.
Maybe the front seats? I don't know about the middle seats.
Each one of those cars that they've sourced from all had better seats than the
I like the Defender seats. You know, like a lot of people knock those Defender seats, but I rather like them. They have like the latex foam rubber seating. But maybe it's just because I'm used to sprung seats in a series Land Rover. But I those Defender seats to be fairly
The Puma seats are actually the TDCI seats are quite nice, actually. They're a significant upgrade.
You're just a TDCI cheerleader. Like, I don't think there's a part of that car that you're not enthusiastic about.
I just love a Puma. It's the best car they ever made. 2009.
I don't know. That dash just keeps like, you know, I feel like I'm in the movie Akira, and the dash is just like gonna envelop me. It just like, you know, it just keeps pushing in towards the passenger compartment. It's overwhelming.
It does. Yes. It also has a little Humvee-esque kind of to it, because it's just wrapped around the existing Defender. It's still under there. Exactly. The Series 3 dash is still under that.
Under
Puma
all that
dash.
Stuff. So yeah, this feels like a wave of plastic is cresting over me as a driver.
It's true. It's true. That is true. So, but it has air conditioning and vents that actually blow air at you in the correct way. So.
Well, if you're looking for a V8 powered Jeep Wrangler with a Defender body, look no further.
So there you go. Yeah, if you got 170 grand burning a hole in your pocket, and you would like something that is not really a Jeep, not really a Land Rover, and has an LS3 in it, then hey, there you go. Give the fine folks over at Blackbridge Motors a call. And speaking of not really a Jeep and not really a Land Rover, heading way overseas, our good friends at the Chery EV Motor Company there in China, which we've talked about many times before, they have been famously creating, let's say, homages at best to Land Rover and Jaguar products for some time now, have struck up a deal. In fact, to now start a sort of what sounds like a partnership with JLR to actually start producing cars together, certainly in China, and maybe other places as well. But it's an interesting development.
Yeah, you know, this is another team up.
A superhero team up.
Conglomeration. Mm-hmm. Land Rover is looking for a domestically, and when I say domestically, domestic in China, produced EV platform for the vehicles that they want to sell there. Chery has made some already. They have not waited for Land Rover. They have made the iCar V23, which we've discussed a little bit on the show, has a lot of Land Rover design features on an EV platform. Land Rover apparently saw this and was like, hey, that's not a bad idea, but we want a piece of that. So they're looking to team up with Chery Motors and make some domestically produced Land Rovers for the Chinese market. Those folks down at the home office in Mumbai seem to think that that's a great idea, and maybe it is. Maybe that's a great idea for Land Rover.
Well, and I think fresh off their victory over the Land Wind, maybe they are swinging a slightly heavier hammer, and you know, maybe they would just take the Chery folks to court, and instead of doing that, they've decided to what sounds like essentially license a body kit to the Chery folks, so that they have an officially licensed Land Rover or Jaguar kit now available in China, which is kind of cool. I mean, that's a novel idea, honestly. If they're just going to rip off the car anyways, why not give them an option?
You think Chery Motors is being strong-armed by Land Rover under threat of lawsuit? That's what you think?
Could be. I mean, they've got one under their belt.
This is a nice car company you got here. It would be a shame if something were to happen to it.
See, we could just sell you these badges here you could put on that car. Then it's a real thing.
Yeah, it's an expensive batch. Well, we'll see what happens. I'm interested to see if that is just whether they just put the badge on the iCar V23. Yeah. Maybe they could do that.
Well, they're going to have all those Land Rover badges left over that they're not going to put on the Octa. They'll have plenty of them left over to sell into the Chinese market as kit
cars. Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Time we live in.
It is an intellectual property. It just Land Rover no longer makes cars. They're just gonna sell intellectual property.
Yeah, they're like a brand. They're like a fashion house. It's like Supreme now. They've just become
Craftsman. It's like Craftsman. Anybody can make like a Craftsman tool.
Anything could be Craftsman now. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's what I said.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. You get a stereo that's Craftsman. You get everything. It still has that lifetime warranty, though. You know, I've told the story before, but I brought a torque wrench that I bought in high school in Canada from Sears back to Lowe's in California like 2 months ago and was given a new torque wrench for free.
Wow.
What kind of insane warranty is that?
You're the reason everything's so expensive.
That's right. I'm the reason I cause inflation personally. It's my fault.
Personally cause inflation. Anybody complaining about inflation, just send a letter. Yeah. Just send a letter to Steven.
It's not Joe Biden. It's me.
Valencia, California.
Sorry about that.
Yeah. So you mentioned the Octa. I understand they're testing the Octa at the Nürburgring.
Yeah, I've heard that as well. Because, you know, if you've got a fast thing that has four or two wheels, you have to go to the Nürburgring. I believe it's the law. In order to get it certified, you first have to go to the Nürburgring and drive it around really fast. Now, it's still camoed up. There's no details yet on what the bodywork is going to look like. Now, there's no chance that they're going to significantly rework the body of the car. There is some, you know, it looks like there's going to be some lowered bodywork. The air dam is going to be reworked a little bit, probably slightly wider fender flares and some things like that, but they're driving it around real fast. They're working that BMW engine hard, apparently, and it's pretty cool. That active 6D suspension, all the D's. The suspension has all the D's. So
says it's going to get BFG all-terrain tires, getting away from the dirt tracks.
Yeah, well, can you blame them?
Yeah, and they're detuning it from the 600 some horsepower rating to whatever those tires will take.
Oh, interesting. Oh,
according to this article.
Yeah, because it's got to be a balance between off-road superiority and on-track performance. Because really, I mean, I don't know. Are you buying a Defender sports car to take it to the track, or do you want to take it off-road as well? I mean, I guess you ask the guys who are buying that, the Glendevagen Squared, are they taking it off-road with those portal axles and everything, or are they just cruising around Beverly Hills? I guess I don't know. I think I do know. But they have fairly aggressive off-road tires on the squared G-Wagons. Like they have a pretty deep track on them, but they're I don't think anybody's taking those off-road, right?
I mean, somebody maybe, but
maybe. No, I mean, probably at the ski lodge or something, right? Like, I mean, people probably in other, not here in the United States, but in other countries, I imagine people have them up at their, like, at the winter house and stuff, or out on the, you know, maybe at their ranch or something where it might get a little muddy or something. I mean, certainly never will they need those portal axles, but, you know, they do come with a deep tread tire, like, standard. So also come with like a 600 horsepower AMG motor.
Those are for the pores, you know, those squared.
Yeah,
the Geländewagen squared, because the squared that's what you really want. That's the one with like the six wheel drive, right?
The six wheel drive, yes. The double squared, yes, yes. The squared, which squared doesn't squared. Actually make any sense. That's that doesn't make sense. But whatever, they portal throw math axles, out the window. Wheel drive.
Yeah,
six wheeled portal axles. You throw math out the window, and I believe the squared, there is a customizer that can put a hot tub in the back of the squared, because the load capacity of the squared is so insanely high, because it's essentially based on the Geländewagen gun tractor that the military uses. It has the load capacity for a hot tub in the back, which if you come to a sudden stop, what happens to all the water just goes into the passenger seat part.
It doesn't have a lid that goes on it?
I gotta imagine it does, but I don't know.
It also has like a little doggy door for your Falcon.
Yeah, that's what you have to have that. Yeah. You got to have that, because you wouldn't want the Falcon to fall into the hot tub. That'd be a whole mess. God damn. That'd be a huge mess. Yeah, Falcon's in the hot tub.
Bunch of soggy feathers in the filter.
Jesus Christ. Oh, God. You never. Oh, my God. I mean, your team of servants would be working all night to clean that mess up. It would just be. God, such an inconvenience.
Your beloved Falcon was clogging the filter in the hot tub in your you'd have to get squared.
Couple of Dyson dryers out to dry them off, and it's just, you know, Hercules would have to, you know, you'd have to very comb them out or whatever you do with a Falcon. I'm not sure, but yeah.
We're getting pretty off track there. We're getting pretty off track. But I do understand that Land Rover is going to be making Land Rovers in India. They're making a plant there. They're making
the plant.
Yeah. So yep. They're going to build.
It was only a matter of time. I mean, I think the Slovakian plant, as we know from our good friend Vlado, who is in charge of, you know, of not just winning that deal, but also supervises the building of that plant and individually christens each Defender that comes off the line. that plant has been wildly successful, as the Defender is by far the most successful vehicle they've ever made. So I guess they figure, well, geez, this making Land Rovers outside of England is working really, really well. Why not try some, you know, in India where Tata is located, see how that goes.
Yeah. I don't know when this plant plans to be online, but I'm looking forward to seeing what they produced. It's going to be like a Mahindra Land Rover.
Oh, that's awesome. You know, hybrid plant.
Yeah. Something like that.
I love the Mahindra so much. I really want one.
Why don't you get one?
I know I can get one. I just can't register it for the road, I guess, but that's all right. I got too many vehicles. I have to trailer places already.
I mean, you can get a Roxor right here in the United States. They sell them as side-by-sides, right?
That's what Freelander ownership does to you, is you've got to constantly be trailering things places. It is road registered. You just can't drive it very far. You don't dare drive it very far. It's too expensive. It's like a Ferrari. You don't want to put more than 10 miles on it a year, because otherwise you're going to spend $10,000 rebuilding the engine.
Can't or don't want to?
Little A, little B.
Well, speaking of plants, I think that we've been meaning to talk a little bit about coatings.
We sure have. Everybody's favorite topic.
This is something near and dear to the heart and soul and mind of all restoration enthusiasts. What do I put on this piece of metal prevent it from corroding and make it
like a good hot dog? You know, toppings are the most important part when it comes to a good restoration. And I think, you know, because some of these vehicles, you know, obviously the original Land Rovers all the way back to the 50s, coatings and the way that they were applied we're just a little different than they are in our modern world, and our approach to the environment and chemicals and the caustic nature of some of these coatings. So they've become a little different and sometimes a little challenging maybe to find the quality and maybe even a place to do some of these things. And maybe the most difficult, or at least certainly something where quality is of question, is probably galvanizing. And also the one that your Land Rover probably has the most bits that are galvanized. Even a Discovery and things has galvanized bits. You know, there's not a Land Rover up until maybe the very newest ones that don't have some parts that are galvanized.
That's probably true. And I think it's something that, as a Land Rover owner, at least of a series Land Rover, and or maybe even an early Defender, one would get the most questions about. So
yeah,
we certainly get a lot of questions from just average automobile enthusiasts. What is that? You know, how is that coated? Mm-hmm. Certainly the galvanizing is applied on a series Land Rover to the cappings, you know, that reinforce the bodywork around the outside. So the trim on a series Land Rover essentially is galvanizing. It's and galvanizing is a coating that not everybody quite understands. I think a lot of people understand that it's zinc, but like, how is it applied? Is it sprayed on? Is it dipped? You know, is it heated? Is it not heated? What, you know, is it plating? Is it a form of plating? You know, what exactly is galvanizing? So, you know, we thought we'd take a little bit of time today to talk about that, since we deal with galvanizing a lot and we're always, always, always galvanizing stuff. So galvanizing is a dipping process, and essentially it's just a big molten vat of zinc. It's pretty low tech from that perspective, but you know, in order to get the zinc to adhere to the steel, there's a number of things that have to happen. So the steel has to be prepared. You can't put like painted zinc parts directly in, or painted, you know, steel parts into a bath of zinc and expect it to stay or have a good, you know, durable coating. So
it has to be typically super clean.
Yeah. Typically the steel is prepared in advance, either by, you know, mechanical means, sandblasting, you know, abrading, or it's dipped in acid. And then it's dipped in flux, and then it's dipped in zinc, and then it's quenched after the fact. So it's actually several steps in that process. There's a number of things that affect the zinc bath, because the zinc is alloyed with other elements, and traditionally that was lead. And lead allowed the zinc to flow very nicely. If you've ever, you know, cast lead parts for model making or firearms or whatever, you know that it's almost like mercury. When you melt lead, it flows very nicely. You can pour it very
nicely. You just roll it around in your hands, rub it on your face. It's just great to work with.
Yeah, you really want to taste it to make sure it's just right.
Just right. It's very sweet. It's delicious.
Please don't taste that. Please don't do that. If you do, you're going to end up like Steven. Nobody wants that.
Just eat a couple chips here and there. Just
eat a couple of lead chips. So they used to be alloyed with lead, and you know, lead has been largely outlawed in many industries due to its contaminating nature and unsightly birth defects. So now antimony is used to allow the zinc to flow, but antimony is expensive. So galvanizers want to use as little as possible to achieve, you know, industry standards. So that is something that we deal with on a regular basis, is how is the zinc flowing, and how well will the finish, you know, end up? Because galvanizing is not typically thought of as a cosmetic
aesthetic
coating.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it's an industrial, you know, functional coating, and there are industry standards,
especially in you know, in as it relates to the cappings, that is, you know, a prime piece of the outside of the body of the car. I mean, that is a visual belt line of the outside of the car. So if the finish is really ratty and, you know, bad looking, then, you know, it really can take away from what is otherwise a, you know, a really high finish restoration. If you've got a, you know, a really low quality galvanizing job, then, you know, unfortunately those cappings can, you know, can really take away from that.
yeah, they're a complex part. They're, you know, they're made of sheet metal. A number of things can happen. Most galvanizers are, you know, used to dealing with bigger assemblies. You know, they view these Land Rover parts as kind of lace doilies. So they have to be extra super careful not to damage them. You know, when you're working with cranes and heavy equipment and, you know, large weldments that are, you know, parts of buildings or parts of, you know, wharfs or piers or, you know, any number of other things that that galvanizing is used for in industry, you know, these small, you know, Land Rover parts are probably a nuisance to a lot of them. So we've got to be careful to try and not, you know, try not to ruin
destroy
the
them.
Yeah, try and
turn them into just a ball of galvanizing.
A ball of galvanizing. So, you know, excessive heat can certainly cause, you know, changes in temperature can cause things to warp. And so we get questions a lot of, from people who are like, I want to galvanize this, this, and this. You know, what do I have to be aware of? So, you know, a lot of the parts, when once they're dipped in zinc, they're quenched with water to cool them off, to allow them to be handled, you know, by the plant staff. But that rapid cooling can cause it to warp. So oftentimes we ask that our parts be air dried, which I'm sure is another hassle and it's another expense for us, but it helps ensure that our parts aren't rapidly cooled. And especially in the case of thinner sheet metal parts like firewalls, you know, that's something that's a little bit trickier to galvanize and have it turn out well. Those, it's really important to air dry those. So we try to you know, we do a lot of galvanizing. We probably galvanize, you know, at least I would say a vehicle's worth of parts every month, you know, if not more. So we're doing chassis and firewalls and door frames and, you know, hood frames and cappings and all kinds of little small parts as well. And so, you know, achieving that big finish. The other thing that, you know, you need to know as a person that galvanizes things is this part galvanizable? You know, is this part that is going to be made worse by galvanizing it? And so, you know, this comes back to how well the zinc flows on the part. So threaded things or assemblies, things that you might see on the Land Rover that are they appear to be galvanized, but maybe they're actually plated, you know, in certain circumstances, vent lifters, you know, these sorts of parts, you know, you maybe don't want to galvanize those because it might ruin those delicate, you know, threads or small assemblies, things with hinges, you know, seat box lids, those sorts of hinges, those parts that move against one another or have threads, a lot of those you might want to think about plating those parts instead, which has a much smaller, you know, deposition, a thinner deposition of zinc on them, and allows those pieces to work better together. And plating
chains,
and that brings us to plating.
That's a great example.
So plating is a depositional process. So you know, it's a charged. Typically, it's charged. You know, you charge the part, and it attracts the zinc particles. Or you know, if you're nickel plating it,
whatever
you're anything, plating it with, it can be a lot of different metals are used for plating, but for the purposes of Land Rover, zinc plating is probably the most common. This is suitable for, you know, fasteners in a lot of cases, or smaller assemblies that move or have threads. And so we do a lot of plating, and plating is often, you know, something that people are unfamiliar with, but it's a really cost-effective process. It's not very expensive, and you can do a lot of parts, but the processing is the difficult part. So when you have a used part that you're trying to plate, cleaning is a big problem, and you have to sandblast that typically, you know, mechanically remove it, wire brush it, you know, whatever. It has to be super clean because the plating process is really dependent on how clean it is. So if you have dirt in your threads, you're not going to get zinc in those threads. And so then you have something that is hard, you have a fastener that's hard to thread together. So it really has to be clean, and processing those small parts is pretty difficult. So that's often the challenge with plating is getting stuff clean.
Yeah.
Because no sandblaster wants to
do you guys plate in house, or you send it out to get plated? You guys do.
We do some plating in house. So some of the things that we plate are like headlight reflectors, you know, those sorts of things that are really fine and the need to be polished. You know, we do that sort of stuff. But large batches of plating, no, we send that out. we send
it. Yeah, send it out. Yeah.
And there's all kinds of different types of plating. And so you can investigate that. There's a whole like type of plating called phosphates. Mm-hmm. And there's iron phosphate, there's zinc phosphate, and it's not like the phosphates from an old fashioned, you know, soda counter. It's also its own type of plating, and it usually gives it a dull black or gray finish. Yeah. And there are certain parts on Land Rovers that are phosphated. And then there's some exotic ones. You know, we've talked a lot about sheridizing. Sheridizing is a little bit different process. It's a depositional process, but it's a vapor. So it's zinc
tumbled
powder in a heated tumbler. And at a certain point, the powder turns into a vapor and it deposits on the fasteners. And there's a lot of things on Land Rovers that are done that way. That's a hard process to find. It's often called vapor galvanizing. We do a lot of that as mm-hmm. well. And then there's also some other exotic, you know, platings and coatings that you find on Land Rovers. Walterizing is a green finish. You know, you see that sometimes on suspension components, and mm-hmm. and that's another process that's a little bit harder to find. Mm-hmm. But then there's, you know, obviously you have paints. There's a whole spectrum of paints for the bodywork. There's Cerakote. Yep. A lot of people are using Cerakote for various things. It's a very thin, you know, coating. Yep. You know, powder coating kind of adds a lot of thickness to.
Yes. Huge amount of thickness.
Parts. And so things that were sort of traditionally powder coated, a lot of people are Cerakoting those now. So pedal towers.
Yeah. It was originally designed for the firearms industry, and now it is, it's widely used for all kinds of stuff. And that's something you can very easily, we Cerakote here all the time, and that's something that, it really does. It's a really nice balance between paint and powder coating. It's much tougher than paint, and it is much more, you know, it's a much more delicate process than powder coating. You can, you know, because exactly, if you powder coat something, expect a quarter of a millimeter of thickness to be added to everything, at least, if not more. And also Cerakoting needs an oven temperature that's about half of what powder coating needs mm-hmm. in order to flow properly, where we, you know, we have a powder coating oven, but a small powder coating oven, but we have a powder coating oven, but Cerakoting you can do in a regular, you could just get an old oven from a pawn shop and easily do, you know, get easily to the temperature for Cerakoting. You could even do it under heat lamps, apparently. Some people do bake their Cerakoting under a heat lamp, and it works just fine.
So. Nice. Nice. Yeah.
It's cool stuff. It's really cool stuff.
It's kind of interesting. We do a lot of engine tin work with that, oil pans and, you know, these sorts of things that you don't want all that thickness added to on a sandblast or in a powder coating sort of coating.
It's very tough. Very, very, very tough stuff.
Yeah. It's cool. It's nice because it's thin. Yeah. So it's good for like accelerator linkages, things that you don't mm-hmm. want a lot of material on.
But it's going to get some abuse, and it's good. It's very high heat too, because it's baked on. You don't worry about it burning off or anything. You couldn't use it on exhaust components, but
one thing that we've been doing anything else recently, which is another coating that you'd find on Land Rovers, is Plastisol. Are you familiar with that? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So mm-hmm. it's kind of like, you know, the Plasti Dip. So all the door handles on Land Rovers is Plasti Dip, but the sort of commercially Plastisol. Available ones that you would find in a hardware store are just like sort of room temperature dipping, and it's really thin and it's not very durable. Yeah. And this is something that you might see on tool handles and that sort of thing. So you can buy Plastisol, and it's more industrial coating, and it's much more durable, adds much more thickness, but you have mm-hmm. to heat the part.
You got to heat it up,
dip it into the Plastisol, and then cure it in a heated mm-hmm. environment. So it's a little bit more involved than just going to the hardware store and buying a can of Glarp and dipping it in there. But it's also way more durable, and it's a pretty mm-hmm. straightforward process, you know, aside from the heat.
Yeah.
But like you said, that could be achieved with a heat lamp or toaster oven or whatever that you find at a yard sale.
Or even look at your local, you know, sort of equipment surplus and stuff. A lot of times you'll find lab ovens, which is what we have here, and they get surplused all the time from, you know, all kinds of different medical and all kinds of different stuff, universities and things. And after they hit a certain date and they hit a certain threshold for being able to keep their temperature, and that temperature could be like plus or minus a quarter of a degrees, which for powder coating, it can be within like 5 degrees. It doesn't matter. They get rid of them and you can pick them up for, I think we paid $200 for our, I think we have a 24 by 24 by 24 lab oven.
Oh, wow.
And it will go up to 380 degrees Celsius. So like an insanely hot, way hotter than we ever would need to do anything. And we do everything from pre-curing carbon fiber printing filament, where you have to get it hot to before you can start printing with it, to drying power or to baking powder coating, to all kinds of stuff in it. And it's really handy. And it's meant for that type of stuff, as opposed to a toaster oven, which, you know, you can use, but they only get so hot. You know, these are enclosed things where the heating elements are separate from the chamber where the stuff is in, so you never have to worry about something dripping on the heating element and starting on fire or anything. Yeah, they're great. And you know, you just look at Facebook Marketplace or eBay or Craigslist or something, and you know, just look for lab ovens and yeah, you can often get one for a few hundred bucks and totally worth it.
Nice.
We'll get you one for Christmas.
Oh, yeah,
lab oven. Well, yeah, you can also bake
easy bake lab oven. There's
a little easy bake lab oven.
There's a university surplus nearby that has them all the time.
Oh yeah, do they also do like cadaver, like surplus cadaver parts?
Couldn't say.
No,
is that something that you need?
Yeah, just let me know if you happen upon that. This is for a different project. That's for a different project.
It's not a red flag at all.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No. No. Okay. Yeah. Just let me know if you just this is another thing I'm working on. So. Just let me know if you happen upon that. Yeah.
Well, Stephen, I think that about wraps up today's show.
On that note, I need to make a phone call. If you haven't yet got your tickets for the big Anarch West Coast event happening in Redmond, Oregon, coming up here at the end of May, you really should. You ought to, because it's going to be one heck of a party. Let me tell you, there's going to be all your favorite Land Rover people will be there. Jeff Aronson's going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Linus is going to be there.
Oh, man.
I mean, those two people alone, that's all I need. That's all I need. All the center steer guys are going to be there. And by all of them, I mean, John's going to be there. And I don't think anybody else, but John's all you need. You know, he's really fantastic.
Is. Yeah.
Really fun guy to hang out with. We've got some shenanigans planned, he and I. Liza's going to be there. Mm-hmm. Jenna's going to be there.
Oh, man.
Again, those two alone, totally worth being there for. Bob Steele is going to be there. Everybody loves Bob Steele. Nobody doesn't love Bob Steele. There's not a single person on earth that doesn't love Bob Steele. It's going to be a heck of a time. There's going to be lots of great trail running. There's going to be vendors. There's going to be food. There will be music, I imagine. Linus will bring his banjo. So that you're going to have that, like it or not. There's
Steven,
no way to opt
Steven
out.
Steven is doing a yodeling seminar.
The yodeling and spoons. I'm going to play the spoons. So
yeah,
between now and then, I'm going to learn how to do that, and I'm going to play those. So how hard can it be?
Eating with spoons. This is what I thought you meant.
And this is what it is. I'm going to get one of those things where you put in your mouth and you know the.
It's a juice.
I'm
going to
do one of those. Yeah, I'm going to do one. Excuse me. I'm going to do one of those. Yeah, that's what I'm going to figure that out. So it's going to be great. So, well, with that, yeah, head on over to the YouTube. We've got great stuff up there. Speaking of fantastic events, our roving reporter, James, just posted the video there a couple weeks back from his trip down to Scar. And what a fantastic video that was. Man, he and his wonderful series two banging around through the trails there in Texas. He looks like he had an absolute ton of fun and probably lost 150 pounds in sweat as he was rolling around the backcountry there. So thanks to James for doing that, covering that event for us. And I think the next thing he's going to cover for us will be up in Ottawa. I think he's going to do the Ottawa Valley event there for us. So looking forward to that. But yeah, I think so. So we'll look forward to that. And so head on over to the YouTube, check that out. We've got some 3D printing stuff up there. We've got some event stuff up there. You can always go and check out Ike and I's trips to Texas over the last little bit, where we got lost in the woods for an entire day, or where we checked out Destination Defender. So lots of great content up there. But until then, we'll see you next week.
See you soon.
The Underpowered Hour is produced by Liza Barris, Ike Goss, and me, Steve Barris. Pavel Svartov composed and performed our theme music. Consider supporting the show on Patreon, and if you already do, thank you. Your support makes the show possible. For even more, check out our Instagram or Facebook.